Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot. And also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Sphere. This is Andy Richter, and you are listening to the Three Questions with Andy Richter. I said it again because I like to hear my own name, especially when I'm saying it with my own voice. The show is called The Three Questions because the three questions are, and I'm telling my guest this right now because I don't think she has any idea why she's here. The three questions are, where do you come from? Where are you going? And what have you learned? I just like to talk about feelings. And this is a good entree into feelings, these questions. And I am lucky enough to be here today with the hilarious and talented and lovely and wonderful and angelic Nicole Byer.
It's me.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's so good to talk to somebody funny because everybody that's been on the show is a bummer.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Dang, dang, dang.
Super dreary.
Oh, wow. Who are some of your guests? Let's shout them out.
Well, I don't know what order this is going to go, but I'm kidding, of course. No, I've talked to Natasha Lyonne.
Not
and
funny.
Lauren Bouchard, who
created
Bob's Burgers.
Not funny.
Joel Kim Booster.
Yuck! I know.
And Amy Sedaris.
Oh, yuck!
Yawn.
Oh.
No, they've all been really. It's all been really great. And I'm sure there's been many more so that you people who are listening to this think that I've talked a lot more than that because not like I've only talked to a few people and done this a few times. So hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Excellent.
I told you before we started that Guy Fieri, or Fieri, however you'd like to say it.
Fieri.
He's getting his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yes.
And I was not invited. Also, I don't even know if you can just go, but whatever.
No, you can.
Oh, I could?
Yeah, it says it's on the street.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Wait. No, come on. We'll go mobile. We'll do it in the van.
We'll podcast
in the van.
But I wore my little guy outfit.
Yeah, you have a guy, you know, I guess it's sort of a bowling shirt, for lack of a better term.
With flames on it. My shoes also have flames.
Wow. You are flaming. You are a hot Cheeto.
I'm a hot Cheeto.
And you're also, it's kind of like a custom car. Like that's whenever I see flames like that, I always think of like hot rods.
I really want to put flames on my car.
Yeah, yeah.
But then all my friends have been like, well, no. Then people will absolutely know where you are at all times.
Yes.
I was like, okay, I guess I won't.
There was one time in Hawaii and I don't know what the fuck I would have done with it. But there was a taxidermied shark's head with flames on it.
Like, well, you would have put that in your house.
I guess I would have, yeah.
You would have put it right next to some award that you have in your house.
Or brought it to church with me every Sunday.
Do you go to church?
I do not.
Oh.
I mean, I'm supposed to. No, I'm not at all.
Are you religious?
I don't believe in God. That's the
problem.
Oh, you
don't?
Yeah, no. You know, even when I was a kid, we had a really great minister. We went. It was for a small town, it was a pretty liberal church, United Church of Christ, which is sort of a very sort of generically softly Protestant denomination. But we had a great minister who just like was a wonderful speaker and a wonderful guy and a sweet, wonderful man. And I loved going to church because of him. And I loved going to church because a lot of my friends went to church. But I was never, ever, ever encumbered by belief in a deity, you know?
It is a weird thing. The Bible's bizarre.
Oh.
Because some of it you're like, it's parables. And then other things are like, it's literal. And it's well, who got to pick and choose that?
Right. Like, yeah, how come, you know, you can't have an abortion, but you can eat shrimp?
Yeah.
You know? And even, you know what, abortion for that matter, there's like something, I can't remember what book it's in, where Moses tells somebody, or God tells Moses maybe, how to abort, like how to like basically cause a miscarriage.
Well,
like there's a how-to in the goddamn Bible about miscarrying.
There's a lot of stuff in the Bible that people ignore. It's a very, also, what a confusing book, you know? It's hard to read. Have you ever tried to, like, read the Bible?
Yes, but not for a long time.
It's hard. Yeah. When I was little, I would try to just sit down and be like, let's get through the Bible.
Right.
It's impossible. It's like a Scientology book.
People who will say, like, I've read the Bible cover to cover three times, it's like—
Lies.
Wow. Well,
lies.
But if it's not lies, it's like, oh, well, that's like saying, like, you know, I put a stick in my eye. You know, I put a stick in my eye, and I continue to put a stick in my eye. It's like, what the fuck did you do that for?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
What a waste of time.
Yeah, you could have read, you know, Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Or something fun.
Or just, you know, talk to people.
Yeah, you could have left your house and spoken
hung out with your family.
One other person.
Yeah. Well, we've started off on a really controversial note. We've destroyed God. Your coffee has just been delivered.
Yes.
So maybe maybe you'll wake up.
Maybe. Who knows? I'm always so sleepy and low energy.
I know. Really. Where are you from?
I am from Lincroft, New Jersey, which is in Middletown Township, which is in Monmouth County.
Okay.
Central Jersey.
Mm-hmm. And has your family been there for a long time?
No. So my dad and my mother met in Chicago, and then my dad got a job at AT&T in Jersey. So they moved to Jersey, got married, had my sister, had me, and then they died. So nobody lives in Jersey.
My
family.
That's too. How old were you when your folks died?
I was 16 when my mom died, 21 when my dad died.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, because those are milestone years.
Yeah,
sweet 16.
Shit. Yeah.
Your mom's dead. 21, you can drink. Your dad's dead.
Yeah.
And then 25, my godmother died. So I have this like whole thing where I was like, at every milestone, somebody's going to die. But then I think I turned 30 and nobody died. So I was like,
so
okay,
the curse
it's
has
good.
Been lifted.
Also,
yeah,
my therapist was like, there is no curse. You're fine.
Of
it's
course.
Just a coincidence.
Yes,
and I was like, Mary, oh boy, thank you so much. Because I thought I was killing people with birthdays. Which
now,
is
your therapist
insane.
Really named Mary? Is your therapist a gay man?
No, her name is Mary.
Oh,
she's
okay.
A nice older woman. White lady.
Nice.
Who is really, really sweet. And sometimes I'm like, I shouldn't use her real name. But then, like, there's 1,000 billion Marys.
Right, exactly.
You know?
And what does she care? It's you.
I don't
that's,
know.
You know.
It's me.
It's you that should be horribly embarrassed by trying to seek out better mental health.
I love therapy.
How long have you been going?
2 years.
Yeah.
I think.
Is this your first?
No. So after my mom died, I went to this therapist and she had red lipstick and white blonde hair and lots of books on her bookcase. And I was convinced that they were all fake because she was stupid. So I was like, there's no way you have real books being that that dumb.
Yeah.
I hated her. Then my next therapist was in Brooklyn and she tried to hypnotize me and she didn't. And I lied to her and I was like, I am hypnotized.
Oh,
and I don't know why. Why I was like pleasing this woman for what? Like, it didn't help me.
Right.
And then I went there another time.
Well, I think also too, everyone wants to believe they can be hypnotized.
Maybe.
Like, it's because I went to a hypnotist and I don't know that I was hip. I mean, I kind of like felt a little zoned out, but I did, you know.
I felt perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Nothing happened, and I was just like, yes.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
But she should have known.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She was dumb, too.
Yeah.
So then Mary is good.
So what you were saying after the hypnotist, was there another one?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Nope. I think that was, three. Mary's three, and
yeah,
she's
yeah.
great.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I think therapy's, like, for me, therapy is takes the place of what church does for other people in terms of like providing a framework and something to believe in and some sense of progress and some sense of like purpose, you know, because there is always, it does always seem to be moving forward. And I've been talking to the same guy for 25 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you ever get worried that your therapist likes you too much?
I do not because he is, he's in New York, and we mostly, you know, I mean, of course, then we mostly talk by phone, but he's like a real, like, I find there's a regional difference, having been to therapists on both coasts.
Wow.
I know.
What a brag.
I'm a real asshole.
Getting help everywhere.
And even in the Heartland, I went to, you know,
what's
in Chicago.
Chicago. Wait, Chicago's called the Heartland?
Well, the Heartland, it's the center of the country.
I'm sorry. It's called the Windy City?
I know. But I mean, as opposed to like both coasts. But yeah, in New York, the therapists that I have seen, and well, in this guy too, they seem much more kind of formal and rigid. And like,
okay.
And then out here, they're so much more casual. Like I've had... Like I years ago had a therapist here who spent most of the time talking about herself.
No.
Yeah, like saying like, that reminds me of something that happened to me.
No.
And I think it was supposed to be somehow illuminating to me that I could hear her. But it's like, no.
No, you don't want that.
Yeah, no, this is about me.
I'm paying to talk about myself.
Yes, it's a totally selfish endeavor. And that's what I like. My guy... For a while, like, I'd sometimes see him in the neighborhood because he was in the neighborhood when I lived there. And it was like seeing a teacher in the neighborhood. It was, like, terrifying.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, you're not supposed to be here.
Yeah. What are you doing here? And then – but then, you know, we've been on the phone since I moved out here in 2001 pretty much, which I've learned to make work. It works fine. And, in fact, I just last week – was there face-to-face, and it's weird to be face-to-face.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because I'm, like, nervous about the eye contact and stuff. Yeah. So, but he came to the show once. Like, he said to me, like, I'm in L.A., and can I come to your show?
Mm-hmm.
And, which, you know, after 23 years or whatever, like, sure. And he came, and he had been divorced and remarried.
Oh.
And I had no idea.
Oh.
Like, because I had seen him once with his wife.
Uh-huh.
You know, whatever, 20 years ago. And then he's like, here with a new wife. And then, so the next session, I'm like, did you get divorced and remarried? And he's like, yeah, about 7 years ago. I was like, what the fuck? Like, that's good.
That is great. That is,
because
I don't even know if Mary's married.
It keeps the focus on you. You
and
know?
I want to ask her, but the last time I asked her about herself, she said, why would you like to know? And I was like,
I know.
Because you're my friend.
Right.
I like you so much.
Just cause.
I just want to know.
Right. Because I'm hoping that then you'll be my friend and I won't have to pay you anymore to talk to you.
I can just come by, drop by, tell you my issues.
We can have coffee. And I never have to give you a penny. Yeah. So, I mean, were you always a funny kid? Were you a funny family?
My mother was very funny. And then now that I'm older, I understand that my dad was funny.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're like, quiet people aren't fucking funny.
Right.
My dad was kind of quiet, but like he was like sneaky funny.
Yeah.
My sister... I think she's funny, but one day I was like, Catherine, describe yourself. And she went, oh, well, I'm very short and boring. And I was like, this was your moment.
You could have said
anything.
And you blew it.
But I think she's funny. I was always very loud, and my mother would be like, you got to learn a time and place to be loud. And I'd be like, but now is the time. Now is the place. So I never quite learned that. Turns out I have ADD, and that's why I was just, like, loud and buzzing around and, like, couldn't focus on things. But in high school, my mom was like, you're very loud, so, like, why don't you go be loud on a stage? Like, act a little bit. And I said, okay. And that's when I was like, ooh, this is what I want to do forever. Like, that first laugh is addictive or addicting or whatever. You're just like, oh, I need this to happen over and over and over and over again. Kind of like how I feel like drug addicts feel.
Because
you're just like, that feeling feels so good. So that's when I decided that I wanted a career making people tee-hee-hee and giggle. Mm-hmm.
Now, I find from my time in doing this, a lot of the people that really get off on that laugh are fulfilling something that's missing. Do you feel like there was something? I mean, this is a pretty prying question, but
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, were you not getting enough attention? Did they ignore you at home?
I got so much attention that it was sick.
Yeah.
Like my mother.
That's different than most people I know that really need it. Didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're making up for something they weren't getting.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think maybe. When I can get someone to laugh, that means they understand me.
Yeah.
They understand what I've said, and it's funny. I wasn't really understood growing up. Like, I would make choices, and my mother would be like, I don't understand why you did that, blah, 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 blah. Like, The last fight we got into was over the PSATs, and I didn't sign up for them. And she was like, why wouldn't you sign up for them? And I was like, I don't need SATs, mama. I'm going to be an actress. And she was like, I want you to go to college. And I was like, I don't want to. So, like, we just, like, fought about that. And she was like, I don't understand. I gave you a check. Why wouldn't you just send it in? And I was like, oh, because I'm not, I don't need academics. I'm funny. So, I would just truly make choices, and she just, like, didn't get it.
That's flawless logic to tell a mother when you're 16 or 15 years old. Because I'm funny, Mom. Oh, okay.
I'm funny. I don't need school.
Yeah. That'll pay the rent.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of attention.
Yeah. Had she gone to college?
Yeah. She worked and put herself through college. And that's where she met my dad. At the University of Chicago.
Oh, wow. Smarty pantses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
I think it was the University of Chicago.
Well, it better be because
that
sounds classy.
It does.
That place is like nerd central.
Oh,
you
is
gotta
it?
You got to be really super smart to go there.
Oh, well, my dad was very smart.
Yeah, yeah. What did he do at AT&T?
He like wrote programs on how you're billed on your phone.
Oh, wow.
So
what
he
a
was
dick.
Yeah, right? How rude. I want to use my phone for free, did he? Yeah, he worked at AT&T and Bell Labs and shit like that.
Wow. So, I mean, but you said your mom was funny, though. I mean,
yeah.
Did she have a job or was she?
She did have a job. So she, no, growing up, she did not. Oh, she worked at A&S, which was a retail store that closed. And then she worked at our school because my mom really liked being a mom and really liked being around me and my sister.
Yeah.
So she was like a lunch lady and she did something else at the school. And then she started working at the church. She was very religious. She was the church treasurer. I think she missed out on being a teacher. She liked kids and she liked teaching. I think she should have been a teacher, but, you know,
whatever.
She didn't do that. And then she worked at the church until she died.
Yeah. How did she pass, if I may ask?
You can ask. Of a pulmonary embolism. So she had a blood clot in her leg that traveled to her heart and stopped her heart.
Oh, that's terrible.
Uh-huh. And then my dad died of a heart attack. So I'm going to die of heart disease.
Well, you can do things, you know.
Well, my dad was fit. He was a very thin, fit person and still died of heart disease. My mom was fat and she still died of heart disease.
I didn't mean that. I mean like medication.
Oh,
you know,
well, he
stuff.
Was on medication.
Oh, he was too?
It's inevitable. I'm going to die. My lovely, cute little heart's going to explode.
Yeah. I always remember there was a guy when I was a kid who was like he was on commercials for healthy foods and stuff. And he wrote a book about like the runner's Bible or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think his name was Jim Shorter. And so he's like a marathon running, you know, like proselytizer about the healthiness of running. Motherfucker dies of a heart attack. Gigantic heart attack. And I mean, at like a fairly young age. And I remember even at that age being like, wow. That sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Death will get you.
No kidding.
It'll come for you whenever it wants.
Yeah. And I mean, and I have friends, people that I know that I've worked with, one just a year or so ago, guy about my age, just died.
Yeah.
Nobody, and he was healthy. I mean, we had worked together years ago, and then the way that I knew him was from seeing him at the fucking gym.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we maintained a relationship over the years, and then just died.
It's kind of wild. You hit a certain age and then people will just continue to die.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not afraid of death. I've already planned my funeral.
Have you really?
Uh-huh.
What is it?
Well, okay. It's in my will, but like technically you're not allowed to like ask people to do things in a will, but that's okay. I have it. My best friend, I told her where it is and she's got to carry it out. So at my funeral, I want to be wearing something real slutty. I also want googly eyes over my eyes.
Okay.
Because I still
I love
be-
that there's a legal document that says googly eyes. Yeah.
And then I gave her the names of three dudes that I want to come talk about my pussy. Just like in a nice, fresh, fun way.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
He is one.
Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil and Jerry Springer. And then I have like a thing I want each of my dear friends to do with my ashes, which like pertains to our relationship. Just like a fun, stupid, silly thing.
Right. Yeah, but save that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't. No spoilers here.
No. I haven't told any of them.
Right.
And then my best friend, I was like, just so you know, I wrote my true feelings about how much I love you. And she was like, oh, well, tell me now. And I was like, no, you have to wait till I die. You can't know how I really feel about you yet. You gotta be sad.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I asked her to go through all of the voicemails I've left her, and she has to compile the best of them and then play them for everybody.
Oh,
and then
goodness.
I want everyone to do like a tight 5 minutes about me.
Nice. That's, you know, the fact that you're not going to tell her what you think about her really puts the pressure on her to maintain that. Like, she can't fuck up from now until...
No,
yeah,
she
yeah,
truly
yeah.
can't.
Wow.
Because I can still edit the document.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Or it'll just be, like, completely wrong. And everyone will be like, what? That's wrong.
Oh, and I also asked her to... I was like, hopefully Deadline will announce my death.
Yes,
because
yes.
I love a good Deadline article about myself. And I was like, I want you to post my Deadline article as my final Deadline article. And then I gave her the caption she needs to post with it. I'm insane.
No. It just... No, you... there's... I mean, and I mean this in the best possible way. You are an expression of an incredible amount of self-love.
Thank you.
Don't you? I mean, I think so.
I do love myself a lot.
Why not? It's a waste of time to
I
not.
I get really confused when people don't like themselves because there's so many things you can do to change
right.
who you are to
right,
be
right,
the
right.
person you want to be. Like on my Instagram, I'll get a lot of people being like, I just wish I was as confident as you. And I was like, oh, that's really easy. Just like wake up in the morning, look in the mirror and go, I like what I see.
Yeah.
And you say it every day until you don't have to say it because you actually like what you see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, fake it until you make
yes.
it is the fucking key to everything.
Yeah.
The key to everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not feeling it. Tough shit, man. Fucking
just
fake
like,
it, you know?
Yeah. Like, my first acting job, I didn't know what, like, a wide, a mid, a close. I didn't know any of that
when
shit.
When I got a job in a cable movie, and it was a scene with Swoozie Kurtz and Bo Bridges.
Ooh, what a
and,
dream.
Yeah, and they were like, and Holly Hunter was in the movie, you know? And so, like, and they were like, okay, we're going to come around to the other side. And I was like, what is that?
Yeah,
mean?
What does that mean?
What is
that?
What is it? What is it?
Yeah. And then sometimes so you just like ask a PA, you're like, they said this, and what does that mean?
Oh, absolutely.
And they'll tell you.
Absolutely. See, I went to film school, and my first work was in film production in Chicago. And when you work freelance, you know, you start as a production assistant, and then they'll give you different jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they'll say, like, can you be a second AD? Like, and you go, yeah. And then you show up, and you don't have any fucking clue.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I did this, and I would do that. I was like a second AD, and it was an out-of-town coordinator. And she's like, so you know how to do contracts, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no. Nope. Like, there's a bunch of extras needed contracts. And I was like, you know, and to me, it was like, take 5 minutes and fucking show
just
me.
Show me.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Or like I did what at the time they'd video assist, which is not a thing that's necessary anymore. But it was a film camera. And actually, Jerry Lewis invented this. There was in the eyepiece, there was a thing that transformed it to a video signal, and then there's a cable that ran off the eyepiece, and then you could run a tape deck so that the client and you would hit record on each take while the camera was taking it on film, and then the clients could watch it, the playback.
Cool.
And before that, there was no playback. But like, I took that job a couple times with no fucking clue as to how to do it, and just was like lucky to have.
The worst thing that happens is you get fired.
Right.
The best thing is you learn something cool and new.
Well, and I mean, and I knew so many people that like there were camera assistants that were like, oh, let me help you, you know, and then they just show you, you know.
My favorite thing on set is asking questions. Like, I am so annoying sometimes, but like, I didn't know what the second camera person did, like when they're pulling focus.
Sure.
And I was like, oh my God. So you're like literally staring at the monitor, making sure it's in focus the whole time. And you're like moving things. And if it's like a steady cam, you're walking with, it's a lot of
absolutely.
Work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, I've seen actors be so like dismissive of like the crew. And I'm like, bitch, they leave after you. They get here before you. They do so like the
it's
nicest thing you can
crime.
Be is nice. And like camera ops, I love them. They're my favorite because they'll tell you if something's actually funny.
Yes.
They've seen everything.
Yes.
So if they're not laughing, you better rethink what you're doing. And if they're laughing, like take that as like a sign that what you're doing is good. And I don't know, they're your friends.
On the Conan show, I'm not... If I make the cameraman laugh, then I'm like, okay, there you go. I make the people laugh,
who
whatever.
Cares?
They're here to laugh.
But also, they're like, this is... It's sparkly and weird, and they're from Ohio, and they're like, I love this Hollywood.
Yes.
They're not real people.
Right.
They don't count.
They're not family.
They can just go home and be like, oh, that wasn't actually funny, but yeah, I laughed in person.
Right. Because the warm-up guy told me to. Yeah. Like, yelled at me to laugh, you know. No, and they are. It's like family. And I mean, I'm not even – at this point, I went to film school. I wanted to be a film actor. That's you know, and then I got into improv. Mm-hmm. And I worked for an audience and stuff. But and I like working in front of an audience. Mm-hmm. And I like the energy. But it's not my preference. Mm-hmm. I set out to be a film actor. And I like the kind of like merry band of like portable city of a film crew. Mm-hmm. And I like playing for those people. I like entertaining. Like I said, it's like entertaining family as opposed to entertaining strangers. Mm-hmm. And I find it much more enriching. So
I agree.
I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, yeah. I miss having a show because it's like for those 3 months, that is your family.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get to know these people and everyone is so interesting. Yeah. And then sometimes they let you like hold the camera. I got to do that once. And I was just like, this is fucking cool.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm learning things.
Yeah, yeah. Or ride on the dolly.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Oh,
yeah, yeah,
that's so much fun.
Well, now you say you wish you had a show. Is Nailed It?
Oh, well, Nailed It is reality. So,
it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
Yeah,
Scripted is my love. Like, I do a lot of unscripted stuff, but I love scripted just because it's so much more challenging than being yourself.
Yeah.
And I think people have a challenge being themselves, but like I've been pretty much myself my whole life.
Yeah.
But making someone else's words your own words, I think is such a challenge. And then being a good actor is a challenge. Like I was watching Aquaman and I don't want to like shout anybody out, but there was this one actor who was phenomenal and she was acting against a person who wasn't to her level. And
yes.
I was like, how curious that like you can really tell who's good and who is not, like who can make words their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love scripted stuff.
Yeah. There's a scene in this last season and I'm not going to name names because I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a scene in this last season of Game of Thrones. Well, I might as well say it. It's like – it's when Arya is talking to the sword maker kid. Mm-hmm. I don't remember his name. I don't remember any of those fuckers' names.
That's fine.
And then she sort of like – you know, she throws a knife behind him and she's supposed to be playing sort of like a top,
mm-hmm.
kind of like a sexy top in that. And he's impressed by it. She's like, that was so out of her wheelhouse that it just, I don't blame her for it, but it just like, cause she's great, but it just was like, I didn't buy her as like the sexy top.
And it's interesting. And someone could be saying the lines and like be doing like an adequate job, but like sometimes you're like, I don't buy it. I don't believe it.
Yes. And there's plenty of scenes I've seen myself and been like, ooh, that was no good. Ooch, you know. But the guy that plays the sword maker guy that ends up having sex with her, that spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but what the fuck? Come on, people, get with it. But like the way he played that scene carried the whole, like it was like, it was such an interesting, like you say, like such an interesting dynamic between somebody that's like, she's trying, but it's not really going up. And then him being like, holy fuck, he's like, whatever slack she's leaving, he is pulling it up. Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, it's so interesting.
It's exciting.
But then also it's like, in a couple of years, they may be the person carrying a scene for somebody else.
Precisely, yeah, yeah.
Acting is such a, people don't get it that like, it's reps. You have to keep doing it.
Precisely.
You have to keep, like your first thing will be whatever, but like, you know, like Meryl Streep wasn't Meryl Streep until she was Meryl Streep. You know what I'm saying? Like her acting styles have changed. Like if you've ever watched Death Becomes Her, it's like so camp and she's so broad in it that you forget that Meryl can be campy and she can be broad, but she does a lot more nuanced stuff now. I love acting.
Yeah, yeah. It's really fun. And it's, and I love it too. What I love about it, and I've gotten in kind of arguments with actors about it, because to me, acting is lying.
Yeah.
It's convincing lying. It's like, which, you know, like I learned how to do as a child. Like, and so you have to think about like the little details that go into getting to someone to believe that you're this person. And I've had actors be like, no, it's really about getting to a truth. It's like, no, it isn't.
I think it's about lying.
Because you're not a mobster. You're not.
I think it's lying, and I think it's getting back to the whimsicalness of, like, being a kid. Because, like, if you think about it, kids, they'll just say anything.
Yeah.
Like, and you're like, what do you mean by that? And they're like, I don't know. I haven't thought it through. But they said it with such conviction that you believed them. And then, like, also looking stupid is a thing. Like, improv is one of those things where they're like, look stupid. And and that helps because sometimes you have to do something in a scene where you're like, I don't know. But then if you take yourself too seriously, it's not going to actually work. So you have to, like, be okay looking stupid.
Sure. You like, the absence of ego is essential.
Yeah.
Essential. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The amount of times I've had to roll on the floor and be a monkey in an improv scene has really helped.
Absolutely.
In my career.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's about lying.
Yeah.
I think it's about lying and being whimsical like a kid.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
How did you get from, was it Lynnwood? Is that what you said?
Lincroft, New Jersey.
How did you get from Lincroft to professional showbiz person?
So my mom died. My dad stepped up as like the primary parent when he wasn't really. Like he was involved in our lives, but he also worked a full-time job. So he was like, where do you think you're going to go to college? And I was like, well, I don't want to go to Rutgers. I don't want to go to a four-year school. I want to go to an acting conservatory. And he said, no. And I said, but I found one where.
Did he ask why you use that weird accent when you say it?
He was like, Nicole, why do you say conservatory like that? My dad, he's always grumbling. So I found this two-year school in New York called AMDA, the American Musical and Dramatic Academy.
Ah.
They don't claim me as a graduate.
Why not?
Because I talk shit about it. It was a terrible school. It was one of the worst schools.
Wow. Was it like one of those for-profit kind of deals?
Yeah. They said that your credits would transfer to the new school, so you could do two more years and get a degree. But then the credits actually transferred to you like being a freshman and a half. So then you had to do like four more years of school.
And
I have several friends who ended up doing that, and they're fine. But I was like, this is my way in. I'm going to tell my dad that I'm going to get my degree after, you know, 4 years or whatever. And he sent me there, and I didn't learn very much.
Yeah.
But then I got to be in New York and be on my own. And then after school, I was truly.
Which is an education.
Yes.
Unto itself.
Yeah. Being on your own, you have to learn how to like feed yourself, fend for yourself. Like I had to get a job. And I was working retail. And retail is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That you'll charge someone $100 for a pair of jeans and sell, I don't know, 100 pairs of those fucking jeans, and then you're going to pay me $7.50 to live in New York City?
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Lane Bryant, because that's where I worked.
I know. I always love in fancy stores when the clerks are real snobby to you, and it's like, you're a fucking clerk.
Yes.
Take it easy.
My friend Paul Welsh, anytime someone takes their job too seriously, he's like, what are you, a shareholder? And that makes me laugh so hard because it's like, what stakes do you have in this company?
Yeah.
But I was like working retail. And then I truly Googled, what do actors do when they're not acting? And something that came up was improv. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll try some improv. So then I started taking classes at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York. And
where were they at that point? Were they?
They had moved into the 26th Street location.
Okay.
And then their classrooms were at 30th and 7th.
Yeah.
And then I think I took classes for maybe like a year before I started working there. So I was working the front desk, babysitting, going on commercial auditions, coaching. It was a lot. And then, things just kind of started snowballing. And then my first job was 30 Rock. I got to be in the tag of an episode.
Oh, nice.
Which was just like the best. Tina Fey was so nice. Her daughter was there and she was very nice. And I talked to her daughter a lot because I identify with children behind the scenes people rather than like a star. I was like, I don't know how to talk to you. You're Tina fucking Fey.
Yeah.
But we like got the scene and then they were really kind to me and let me improvise, even though it was a tag and they were never going to use anything other than what they needed because it's so short. But, it was just like really incredible that they let me do that. And it was
because her and Robert Carlock, they're people that appreciate fun and funny, you know, like Tina's a fucking genius. You know, I've known her forever and she's an amazing person and a wonderful person. But she also like she's a genius, but she's also like somebody that likes to have fun and somebody that understands like that. If you take the fun out of this and if you take the play out of it, which I worked with plenty of supposed comedy professionals that love to take the fun out of it, that love to like, and I don't know whether it's because they live up their own ass or whatever reason.
Well, sometimes comedians don't want to not be the funniest person on set.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which is a wild thing. And it's like you have to let the ego go, like, because it's comedy. Like, someone's going to be funnier than you. You'll be funnier than someone. It's not like a mathematical equation. Yeah. Like, it's just things fucking happen. And she was so, like, she, like, laughed at stuff I did. Like, it was just a really, really, really great experience for my first job.
Right. Because she's not threatened.
Yeah. 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 She has the show.
Yeah. But also, she's not threatened because she's self-contained and that she's a fucking genius and she's having fun and like, and there's plenty to go around. You know, that's always been my feeling too. I've never, from early days, and I mean, and this is also part of like, I mean, I was sort of genetically engineered and trained to be codependent and sort of to service people that are needier than me. I don't mean anyone in particular. But, I mean, from, like, my childhood into, you know, different relationships and everything, it's like I've always been kind of the person that's sort of like, oh, you need it? Oh, okay, go ahead, hon. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. And I kind of have, you know, derived a sense of identity and almost kind of, like, superiority out of it. Like, this fucking needy fucker over here, I'm all right, you know. And, you know, and of course has had terrible psychological side effects that I'm still trying to fucking fix today. But, like, I always noticed it early on in improv, the people that really fucking needed it, I always felt like, all right, go ahead, go out there. You go stand at the, you know, down in the, at the front of the stage and I'll stand back here. And then what I figured out after a while was I'll stand back here and I'll still win.
Yes.
Because I'll wait while you're up there sweating and trying and stuff.
Your work is so
I'll
hard.
I'll pick my fucking spot and
you'll
I'll
say the funniest thing of the
scene,
show.
And then you'll be like, I'll get that sense of superiority a different way. but no, I've never understood. Like, and I've heard people, it's never really happened to me, but I've heard people, and this is the kind of thing that you know, you hear about, but you can't believe happens. They kill with lines in a sitcom script. Then they go away, and then they come back.
And they're gone.
All those lines, or they're given to
somebody else.
Higher up on the call sheet, somebody with more power. That's bananas to me. That's so fucking crazy that somebody has the shamelessness to say, I want that line. That line that guy killed with or that woman killed with.
I want it.
I want it. Give it to me.
Which is bananas, and I've seen it happen, and it is truly just out of this world. And I did a show once where I improvised something and the director really liked it. And then because we shot out of order. And then the next scene, the girl who I was in the scene with said the line I improvised that's going to be later in the show. And then the director was like, yeah, man, that is funny. All right. So you keep it and then we'll lose it in the other scene. And I was like, but I literally wrote that for you. What do you mean? And then it was also, it was a a fucking multicam. So it was in front of an audience. And then I like said something else. And then in the next take, she said it before I could say it. And I was like, oh, so that's what this is. I'm going to improvise really funny things and you just get to have them. So I'm just punching up the script for you, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was not fun.
No, it's and you know, and it's also it's really in the long run, it's terrible management, because what they've basically done is they've de-incentivized you to be funny and to be as funny as you can. When you obviously are showing like, hey, I'm a funny factory. Mm-hmm. Let me go. And they're like, you know, OK, thanks. We're going to shut you down now, basically, because like one of the sitcoms that I worked on that I was. Well, it's Quintuplets. I worked on Quintuplets and I was just I just was an actor on that show. I got, you know, my pattern when it came out was like, develop a show. And if it goes, you know, like, then do that. And then try and do another script. And if that doesn't go, then just try and get a job on a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one. And it went. And it was like one of the most lucrative things I've ever done.
Cause baby. Network television. Episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, 22.
But early on, I was so used to being appreciated for my ability to make funny things and to contribute to funny things. And I always, and to me, it's always like, hey, you're moving heavy stuff. I have muscles.
Uh-huh.
Let me pitch in. And there was a moment early on in that show where we were shooting without an audience doing, you know, because
like
for people that don't know. Yeah. When you shoot a multi-camera show, a lot of the scenes now, just to save time, are pre-taped so that the audience doesn't have to sit through the taping of the entire half hour, because it can be fucking tedious. And we, in between, the writers were all sitting around the living room set, and they were pitching on the next scene that was going. And I just had a cup of coffee, and I walked over, and it's like dark, you know, because it's like it's not lit, but they're sitting around. And I walked up and just kind of stood at the end of the at the outside of the circle. Comedy people pitching something I'd been doing at that point for like 10 years. Came and stood up outside the circle, and it came to a halt. The discussion, the like pitching of jokes came to a halt. And the head writer, who I was standing over his shoulder, looked over up at me and said, like, hi, what can we do for you?
Wow.
And I said, oh, I just, you know, I was just listening. And he went, oh, okay. And I just was like, and I walked back to my trailer and I just was like, oh man.
That sucks.
You fucking idiot. Cause I, you know, I mean, it's the, call it arrogance, whatever. It's, it's like, you want to have a fucking funny off with any of those people sitting on that fucking thing with me? I will crush them, motherfucker.
Also, it's like they cast you because you're funny.
No shit.
And then also, you know your voice.
Yeah.
So you know a joke for your voice.
Right.
So
exactly.
What a wild thing to be like, let's exclude him. He's not one of us. He's not a writer.
And I'm not like, you know, it's... I'm not like just some airhead that says lines, you know? So as the season went on, there was a... It started to sort of become difficult.
Yes.
Like the scripts were becoming difficult. And they were like, and I said to the showrunner at one point, I said, you know, I've never had a scene, because it was quintuplets, three boys, two girls. I said, I have never had one scene alone with my daughters. I said, I've had plenty of scenes alone with the boys. I said, but I've never had a scene alone with the daughters. I would love to have that dynamic, because I like women better than I like men anyway. But because my TV daughters were so fucking good, and I wanted to do a scene with them. So I basically stole an old Second City idea. And I said, what if we go to visit an old relative and the old relative dies in kind of a hilarious way while we're visiting? And that like me and the girls sort of were sort of struck by the tragedy, but can't help but laugh. Like, and it's an old Second City scene. And he was like, that's great. And it ended up being Phyllis Diller being like this old aunt that we,
I
think she fell down an elevator shaft or something. But so they wrote that episode and it was great. And I loved working with my TV daughters. And then like the next time, then he came up to me, the showrunner came up to me later and was like, listen, if you have any other ideas for stories, you know, just let me know. And I was
Oh, boy.
Like,
it's like, we could have been doing this from the jump.
I just was
You wasted time.
I was like, This is like episode 13. Mm-hmm. You should have not been so shitty to me on episode 3, because fuck you, buddy. You're on your own. No, no, no. This brain.
Goodbye.
This brain only lets things go when I say. And I say to you, go away.
No, go away.
No, no.
I don't like you.
But anyway, so, and then your first show that was, I mean, like, did you do a lot of paying gigs before the MTV show?
No, because I got the MTV show, the audition for Girl Code, the day I was flying back from a Torco for UCB.
Oh, wow.
I was doing Torco, which means we would go to colleges for pennies and do improv to kids who didn't want it.
Right.
So many shows, they'd be like, stop it! And you'd be like, but we're just getting out the who, what, where.
Right, right, right.
They were not
Be patient.
Having,
we'll find something.
We'll find something fun. Yeah. And we'll reference your school, and you'll love that later. So I landed and then had the audition for Girl Code, and I looked it up on my phone, and I was like, okay, so it's a talking head show. I don't really understand how those work, but I'll go to the audition, and we'll figure it the fuck out. And then I booked it, and they never told me how many episodes I was shooting. So I think it might have been 20 episodes. So they were flying me back and forth to New York. By that point, I was living in LA. And then by like the third or fourth time they flew me back, I was like, how many episodes am I doing? And our showrunner, this woman named Laura Murphy, was like, all of them. And I was like, oh boy, what a treat. And then
you've got good representation that you had to fucking ask that question.
I won't ask questions. There was one commercial that
Why didn't your agent know this?
Oh, I don't ask them questions.
Oh, okay.
I'm very thankful to work.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I ask questions. Now right. I understand that like I'm worthy and I need to know information.
Yes, yes.
But I had this one commercial where it was for Comedy Central, Belvita Breakfast Biscuits, and they were like, meet us at a white van on 54th and 8th. And I said, yes, you should ask questions.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then as we drove upstate, I like turned to the other actors and I said, if someone wanted to murder actors,
this
is what you do.
Yeah.
Just tell them to meet you
if
somewhere.
If you want to get them into a sex cult, this
yes,
is how you do
this
it.
This is how you do it. And actors will literally do anything for a job.
Sure.
Like sometimes SAG will be like, you cannot work on this.
Uh-huh.
You cannot. It's a stop order work. And the WGA is like, we're firing our agents. And everyone said, okay. So like actors are just so desperate for work.
Sure.
But then I did Girl Code. They didn't promote it, and then it just happened to be a hit, which was, you know, very nice. I keep having
nice,
to be on shows where they didn't do any promotion for Nailed It, and people just found it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was very, very cool.
I think it might be you. I think so.
I don't know.
No, I think it is.
Well, I had another show that they didn't promote, and then nobody watched it.
Well, that wasn't your fault. That
Thank
show.
You.
Yeah, that was everyone else in that show
okay,
was
yes.
a piece of
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, it was everybody else. Everyone else was trash.
What was that show?
It was called Loosely Exactly Nicole's on MTV.
Oh, right, right.
They put up a billboard on Sunset, which was like insane.
Isn't
to
that
see.
Crazy?
So crazy.
I think I've had that once.
Really?
And I didn't expect it. And it was just like,
It
was almost uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable, but then also crazy. And you're like, I want this all the time.
Oh, okay. See, that's where you and I differ.
They didn't put an air date on it. So I was like, I'm real thankful, but
Help us out.
The name of the show, or maybe the name of the show was on it, but there was no air date. And I was like, for who was this for? For me?
Yeah, yeah.
They put an air date on it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the problem with just, there's so many ways for things to go wrong.
But there's also simple things.
Yeah.
Put an air date.
Yes.
On. And then they were like, make sure you tweet about it. And I was like, oh, okay. So you want me to tweet to the people who follow me, who probably watch the show? We got to figure out the people who don't follow me,
how to get
them to watch the show. And they were like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but that involves them having an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Them having an idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the second season of Andy Richter Controls the Universe, the head of the network, and she's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But she said to us, because this, you know, the show was kind of different. Like,
mm-hmm.
like one of the things that they said at the time was, Fox comedies are families, and this isn't a family; it's a workplace. Like, as if people are like, oh, I turn on Channel 11 and I see people that aren't related.
And I don't get it.
Yeah.
They're different ethnicities, and there's
so
a fax machine.
Ah. So, okay, whatever. But she said to me and to us, she was like, I just don't know how to promote this show. And I was like,
commercials.
I was like, you
Billboards.
Said to us, make a funny show.
Yeah.
We made a funny show.
And now you're going, I don't know how to promote it?
That's our job.
Truly, the way
promoting
you promote a family show
job.
is the same way you'd promote this show.
Yeah. Buy ad space.
Yeah.
Put us on the side of fucking buses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on.
It's.
I know. And I, you know, and then I've had other shows too that like where they, like Andy Barker PI, which actually was my favorite of the shows that I did, was on, I think there were, I can't even remember. I think there were maybe 9 episodes of that. It was on 4 different time slots in 9 episodes. And some of those were just, they burned it off. They put 2 in a row on like a fucking Friday night.
Yeah, that's what happened to my show.
Ugh, it's so, and it's like, that's what people don't understand too, I think. The quality of the work, the quality of the show, the quality of the acting, the writing, all of that is so far down the list in terms of like the actual survival of the thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Like Arrested Development only lasting 3 seasons is wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I found it later and then was like, there's no more? Yeah. Why? This is so fun. Why?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that's like Breaking Bad. Imagine if Breaking Bad was on now. They probably wouldn't have let it found its audience. Like, I don't feel like people found it till season 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So it's like, you got to leave shit on. There's so much content.
I think Breaking Bad number 1 would be on streaming now.
Oh, and absolutely.
Although AMC still does kind of do some stuff, although they're sort of zombie-centric now.
They love The Walking Dead.
Yeah, they sure do.
I've also never seen Game of Thrones. You were talking about Game of Thrones, and I was just like, I watched not the last episode, but the second to last episode.
Well, that's good.
That's the only one I've seen. And I was like, everybody dying.
it actually is really a fun show. It's like a really good escapist thing that, to me, you know, I started watching it from the beginning and was embarrassed that I was watching it when I first started. Yeah, because to me it was like Falcon Crest with, you know, swords and dragons and shit. And I was embarrassed, you know. But it was also, too, like from the beginning, there's like the first episode, there's incest and shit like that. Like explicit fucking scene of like brother and sister. So it was kind of like, wow. and that kept me going. Anytime
you
there's
were
brothers
like,
and sisters.
I love a brother and sister.
Exactly.
Fuck.
Yeah. So now people know what my U-porn searches are. I like that you go
to U-porn and not Pornhub.
Oh, I go to them all. You know, you gotta mix it up. You gotta keep them from that ad coming up on the second video
You
look at. You know what I mean?
I do.
Sure, of course you do.
I love porn. I like this one man right now. I bookmarked him, which feels insane. Because anytime I like search on the internet, I'm like, what if someone sees I have porn bookmarked?
No, yeah, but I mean, you know, whatever.
Whatever. I fucking flick my bean.
Yeah, come on. I forgot what I was doing. This flicking bean totally frazzled me.
Sorry.
No, but, Game of Thrones, it went on and it did become a thing, it really is like there were so many episodes that I was like mad, like a baby that its bottle had been taken
away. Well, people
away.
Are mad about the who won the game.
I just mean mad that it was over.
Oh.
Like each hour episode, it's Sunday night, I'd sit down to watch it and nobody in my house watched it with me. Like my wife was like, what the fuck are you watching that shit for? And then, but it, like the episode would end and I'd be like, baby wants his bottle. Give it to me.
That's so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess RuPaul's Drag Race is like that. I love RuPaul's Drag Race. Yeah. I just love drag queens.
It's a pretty
queen.
Great show.
It's RuPaul, a good time.
RuPaul is like a zen god. People out there, anytime you see RuPaul being interviewed, read it because you will come away a better person.
Yeah, Ru talks a lot about like meditation and taking time for yourself and taking space for yourself, and I really love that.
Just such a brilliant person with such a wonderful philosophy. I love him. Tried to get him on here, but then he won't. We're not
Ru
having any luck.
So busy.
I know, but come on, it's me.
It is you.
It's me.
Rue, find the time.
Yeah.
Rue.
Come on,
Rue. Find the time, Rue.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening.
And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
So let's go to where are you going? Like, where do you think you're headed? What's your hopes and dreams?
Well, my hopes and dreams are I hope I continue working. I would like to, you know, be on another show or sell another show. I'd like to do movies. I haven't done movies much yet.
Are you the kind of person that has a specific kind of goal? In the next 5 years, I want to be the star of my own whatever, or, you know, well, or I want to play Carnegie Hall or whatever, that kind of thing.
No.
Yeah.
I do write specific things down that I want in my planner every year.
Sure, of course. Your vision board.
Yeah. So, like, I would like to play theaters. Theaters is something that I want to do next with stand-up.
Yeah.
I would like to star in a movie that like maybe I've written or something, mm-hmm. but like something that's like my voice. And then I would like to have a show that's my voice. So yeah. Like, I just want to continue making things that are my voice. And eventually I'd like to like write a book.
Yeah.
And people have asked me recently, like, would you write like a memoir, you know, essay book? I'm like, no, I'm 32 or 33. I don't know anymore. But like, I haven't lived enough. I feel to do this. Like 40, 45 to me is the sweet spot.
I'm 52 and people have said to me, write a book, write a memoir, mm-hmm. write a book. I still feel like,
right?
What the fuck do I know? You know, yeah. I have to wait for people to die to really write the book I want to write.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk shit about them dead people.
Mm-hmm. They're the best kind of people to talk shit about. But I think that's a good thing. I have always, and I've said it before on one of these, making your goal a process mm-hmm. as opposed to a thing is a very useful thing, because the process is always flexible. Whereas mm-hmm. if you attain the thing, you got this engine making all this, you know, pushing you towards mm-hmm. this thing, and then you make the thing, the engine's not going to stop.
Yeah.
You know?
And I try not to be super specific, because sometimes what you ask for is not necessarily what you need or want.
Yeah.
So I feel like if you get too specific, then like the universe tries to steer you to this like one thing that you're like, I want this. And it's like, well, maybe you didn't need that now.
Right, right.
So that's why I try to keep all my goals pretty open-ended. But like, you know, like me saying I want to do movies doesn't mean I want to do one.
Right, right, right.
I would like to do a lot.
Yep.
I would like to do another show for me, like shows. After that one, I hope to have another one.
That's my thing. I just want to have a long career.
Same.
You know, yeah. And I mean, and I'm, you know, I've had my own sitcom, which I was both the star of one, you know, one that I didn't write, and then ones that I was, you know, mm-hmm. contributed to and wrote for, and, you know, and I'm talk show sidekick and cartoon voices mm-hmm. and, you know, and game show host, you know, I mean, so like, I've just, you know, it's, I feel like kind of like I'm waiting to become a weatherman, you know, just to really hit every niche. But I think it's a vital thing and a very healthy thing to just kind of remain open to whatever happens mm-hmm. because you're sort of, I think you're bulletproofing yourself against disappointment mm-hmm. because you're just, you know, you've got it open as opposed to hitting something and then the lid closes mm-hmm. and then that's it. And now you are a complete thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you're never a complete.
You're never complete. You're always working towards something else.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Sure.
Like I said, I didn't want to do unscripted anymore. Like that was a blanket statement I said a couple years ago, but then I got nailed it and I was like, well, they said they'll let you do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You don't know about baking, and they're fine with that.
Yeah.
this might be fun. Why don't you just do it? Like, don't let and that door close. And then it ended up being really fun.
Yeah. And easy, too.
Yeah.
I imagine.
Oh, yeah. It's very easy. It's 10 hours of me just doing literally whatever I want.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Say the copy. But other than that,
yeah.
I do me.
And that's, because that's what, like for me to do game shows now, that's because I've been like, you know, the whole Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I've been on TV. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. I've been on TV. And so like, I do feel like, you know, you're the same way. You've been on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Many different ways. So you can be on TV however you want. Mm-hmm. You know, like you could be on Walking Dead.
I could.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm a zombie.
Now we get to the sort of like, what have you learned part? I mean, do you, I don't know. I guess that the form that would sort of take maybe is like, what do you think people would take away from your story? Like the story, like if you were a story at this point, like what do you think people would take away from, like, what's the point of all this?
Well, I hope that when people look at me, that they learn that I learned to love myself. Like, loving yourself is a journey. It's a hard thing. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to look around and see what other people have and get jealous or down on yourself. But like me personally, I learned that, like, you don't actually know what's going on with other people. You kind of have to keep your eyes on your own paper, worry about yourself, and that loving yourself isn't bad. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you're self-absorbed or self-involved. It just means that this vessel that you're in currently, you love. And that's good and that's okay. And however you want to express yourself is good and that's okay. So that's something I learned that I hope when people see me that they in turn can learn that. I also learned that things are hard and that's okay. Like, it's okay to be disappointed. I've learned to not get hung up on shit, to just, like, move the fuck on. My ADD helps a lot with that. But moving on is a good thing.
Yeah.
Professionally, I've learned a lot. Personally, I don't know.
Really?
I'm just looking for someone to love me.
I know.
And I don't know how to make that happen.
Oh, it's the oldest story in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do want to ask, because, you know, we say, and I said, you know, fake it till you make it, learn to love yourself. Are there specific, is there any specific things that you could name between Nicole not loving herself and Nicole loving herself that you can give to people to help?
Yeah, sure. I grew up in an all-white neighborhood, and me and my sister were two of the only black kids there, and then I was fat, and then there weren't that many other fat people, so, like, I was a fat black girl with, like, zits and bad hair, and I just felt very much like a fish out of water or like I didn't belong or whatever. And then I would always wear, like, a cardigan or whatever in the summer because I was like, God forbid someone see my fat arms.
Right, yeah.
And then I stopped swimming because I was like, oh, what if they see my fat body? And then about, like, 18 or 19, I was like, hold up. If I wear sleeves, my arms are still fat. They're just covered.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't swim or if I wear, like, a shirt in the pool, my shirt is wet and now stuck to my fat little body. So, like, who am I hiding for?
Yeah.
Like, who? So then I just kind of started wearing sleeveless things and I started wearing bikinis because I was like, who? Also, a bikini is just easier to, like, pee in.
Yeah.
Like a one piece, you have to, like, get all
absolutely
down.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Two piece is underwear. You just slide it on down and it's real easy. And then I learned that if somebody looks at me and has, like, something rude to say about something I'm wearing or, like, the way I look, cool. Who cares?
Yeah.
That means I affected that person living my truth so much that they had to stop their life to say something to me, and I'm never going to think about them again.
Yeah.
That means I'm powerful. That means I made this person react. And then also, I used to look in the mirror every day and, like, grab my little titties and go, I love you, and, like, grab my, like, little rolls and be like, this is nice. And now I don't have to anymore. Now I can get dressed and, like, look at myself and go, ooh, you a badass bitch. Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, sometimes I have bad days and I allow myself to have bad days. Also, therapy.
Yeah.
I cannot stress it enough. Yeah. I really love it. There's sliding scale therapy if you don't have the money.
Yes.
There's Talkspace, which is an app that I don't know very much about. I'll say that. But it's, you can text somebody and they text you something back. And I'm not saying to take their shit at, like, face value because I don't know these therapists, but, like, it's good to talk to someone who's not a friend who's got no stakes in your life.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the hurdles that finances are, you know, that finances are, you know, exist before therapy is a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've talked very pro-therapy on Twitter. I mean, Twitter's really my main online presence. And I've talked very openly about therapy on Twitter, and people are always coming back, well, I can't afford it. And so you say exactly what you said. Google sliding scale therapy in your area.
And they'll be like, oh, you make $100 a week? Well, you get to pay a Skittle.
Yeah, they will. they and that's, you will be able to find something that, like, and I can't say you'll absolutely be able to afford it, but you will be able to find something. And the larger point is, and I, because I can't change people's financial situation, but what I can change is the people who think, or what I hope I could change, and the people I could talk to is the people that, like, think that there's something shameful in it.
Yeah.
Or that it's an admission that you're sick or that you're broken or that you're wrong, which is just wrong and dumb and self-destructive.
Yeah. And I think everybody at some point needs help.
Yeah.
Everybody, whether you're well-adjusted or whatever, like, you need support. And sometimes a friend can't give that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all about therapy. My uncle said to me once, he was like, I don't think you have ADD. And I was like, oh, what do you think I have? He's like, well, I don't know. And I was like, well, when you figure it out, get back to me. But now, I'll take my little Vyvanse and be on my way. It's been very helpful.
Yeah, I've always said, if you had a compound fracture, you wouldn't walk around with a bone sticking out of your leg. You'd go to the doctor. The same thing.
Yes.
You're miserable. You can't get out of bed. You can't, you know. Go to the doctor.
Yeah. And people think depression is a thing where you can just snap out of it. But I'm like, you don't, if you don't have depression, you don't understand how hopeless you can feel and how you're like, but if I get out of bed, what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
So I'll just stay. And it's like, well, that person might need, you know, an antidepressant or like something, you know?
Yep,
so don't tell that person that their feelings don't matter.
Right.
And then a nice thing that Mary, my therapist, has taught me is that feelings aren't facts.
Yeah.
Which is like a really nice thing to hear, to be like, oh, I might feel so sad right now, but it's not a fact.
Yeah.
It's a feeling.
Yeah.
And you can figure out how to get out of bed and you can live your life. And if it's taking a pill, then okay.
Yeah.
Or if it's light therapy, that's okay too. Right. Yeah. I think we all need to just be okay with ourselves and love ourselves. Give yourself a hug if you're listening. Just hug yourself.
Okay. We're going to give you a second hug.
Just hug yourself.
Yeah.
Are you done?
You can cop a feel, too, if you want.
Yeah.
Nobody will say anything.
Yeah. Grab it.
Well.
Squeeze a titty.
Well, squeeze a titty's as good a point as any to leave this episode. This has been, as you are, a goddamn joy, Nicole.
Hey, thanks. What a treat.
Thank you so much for doing
Andy,
this.
Thank you so much.
It was really fun, and I think we helped some people.
I hope so.
And you know, and if we didn't, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you know?
if we didn't help you and you're still listening, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, we helped you kill an hour.
Yeah, you fucking loser.
Come on. Yeah, you fucking loser. Anyway, thanks, you fucking loser, for listening to The Three Questions with Andy Richter. So much fun having Nicole Byer here, and we will be with you next time. Thank you. Got a big, big love
for you. The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It's produced by me, Kevin Bartelt, executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Chris Bannon and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, associate produced by Jen Samples and Galit Sahayak, and engineered by Will Becton. And if you haven't already, make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.